Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. Welcome to Endurance Chat. This is your host, Cookie Monster FL, here with a solo session, a session everybody has feared, dreaded, the horrific, inevitable, depressing hour of solo Cookie Monster. Just for a bit, we'll talk about GT3 coming up with a quarterly review kind of from some friends of mine, so we'll stick around for that. But in the meantime, I want to talk about Sebring that I just got back, well, I guess a couple weeks ago, from talk about the race, how that went, some of the support series there, as well as WC and ELMS previews, and the prologue that is currently going on has already happened, if you're listening to this in a bit. So we'll cover that, and then kick it over to those guys, and they'll talk about some GT3s. Yeah, Sebring. That was an enjoyable event, as it always is. The weather kind of mirrored last year, which was really nice for me, at least, because it was a good... I didn't have to prep too much differently, because some years you really have hot spells where it's just really, really hot. Like, we're talking 80, mid-80s and upper humidity, and then you get rain coming through, and it's... where it's just even difficult to sleep at night, so... I appreciated the cooler temperatures. It felt a little bit more like spring, in where I'm currently living in Wisconsin than it did the hot spring summer that it always feels like in Sebring in March. So the weather was fantastic. We had a little bit of smoke and fog, which made an interesting ambiance in the morning. So we got crazy shots, which I really haven't seen in terms of the setting of Sebring and some of the shots in the cars in the morning, which was amazing. We had insanely crazy accidents at pretty high speed places on the track, which we haven't seen wrecks like that in a while here. And luckily no one was hurt or injured. We saw interesting safety cars that decided to be thrown for debris on track from specific issues with keeping canopies under control. So all in all, a very, very unique and interesting event leading up to what will be just a complete festival of speed next year with the addition of WC. But points aside... congrats to ESM for the overall win. Congrats to Porsche for the GTLM win as well. Congrats to Paul Miller GTD, their GTD win, with Lamborghini. But I think I want to start off with saying that BOP was something that I thought we wouldn't really have too much of an issue with in, I don't want to say GTLM. I had confidence that we wouldn't really have an issue in GTLM, but the overall setting of the prototype category is, I think, what there might be an issue with, and definitely people had points on both sides, but I think there was definitely a problem with the prototype category's BOP, to just be completely frank. DPIs seemed to, by and large, run pretty consistent lap times that were very, very good. Mazdas seem to have a little bit more pace, and so I guess if you're from a BOP standpoint, everything has to be completely equal. That seemed like they were still getting better fuel economy while still maintaining good pace and consistency. They just have still reliability issues, which again plagues them as a problem of Mazda. I can't stand Team Yost to not finish these races, so I need them to start finishing these races and start finishing the lead lap for these things. So, but overall, we really didn't see any of the international prototypes compete at all. So that was disappointing. Colin Brown and Core definitely competed, and you saw the lap times be pretty up there. But I just feel there people made these points where that I feel like they feel like the international prototypes should be up there, almost even having an advantage and having to basically defend their advantage from the much more professional DPI teams than they should, where they're just trailing by what seems to be a second to a second and a half a lap slower by in general. Obviously, it's up to the talent of the teams, it's up to the drivers, up to the engineers, it's all that other stuff. There's the intangibles that go into making a very good race team race. And especially when you have four to five different pro teams, let's just say that, it's hard to basically go, hey, we're going to take this really competitive thing where you're trying to find an edge in any different way, and we're going to say we're able to pin you down into this segment of speed, and we're going to add these guys above it. And to try to figure that out and to actually get it close is a lot tougher than I think everybody gives anybody credit for. But still, I would really like to see the P2 category be buffed a little bit more. And I mean the international prototypes for P2s be buffed a little bit more for the DPI categories. So that it's not that we're not seeing just a complete what appears to be a runaway when we could instead see some of these privateers keep up. And echoing that sentiment will obviously be something that the WC is going to try to do as well to make sure that the privateers are keeping up with the factory singular effort, which makes it much, much easier, but then much more blatantly tougher to smooth everything out so that everybody's satisfied to the result. Because we always have this problem with endurance fans as well, that there's the BOP lovers and the BOP haters. So it's a love-hate relationship in the endurance family. And I just feel that balancing, I think P2s need to be buffed, but understanding where that is much tougher than I think everybody is. I don't think everybody is right to say that, oh, they're a second and a half down. That means they're a second and a half down. I think they're a little bit closer than that. They just don't have the caliber. That's why I still complain whenever anybody asks, why are you always complaining about the P2 category in IMSA? It's because there is no pro lineup of just an international prototype, 2 that is it racing at IMSA that you can have a measuring stick and go, okay, this is a pro team. I know they're competent. They've got good drivers. This is where they're standing in DPI. You don't have that because you have a lot of gentleman drivers. You have a lot of more fly-by-night operations than you do with the pro teams, and all of them have DPIs. So beyond United Autosports, which clearly was struggling, but this is their first race here, it's hard to say that there was such a huge problem with it. There was definitely a problem, but I don't think it was such a big problem still. But I've turned into more of an apologist than than an accuser these days, so we'll see if I switch hats. But beyond that, crazy racing in the prototype category. Penske can't ever seem to finish one of these things so that they can actually get there at the end. Juan Montoya is still scaring the absolute daylights out of me whenever he's overtaking GT cars. He's the closest out of anybody that I ever see. Literally, when I'm at the track, it's just noticeable when I'm watching these cars go by that I know when Juan Montoya is in, because you can literally see him just millimeters away from these cars. So although that wasn't the reason why that car went out, it certainly played a factor, I'm sure. Which apparently they had engine failures that were similar but had not come up in all the testing they did. Well, there you go. So even Penske can get caught out, just as Mazda and Team Yosta got caught out to a third burn clutch. Lots of crashes in turn 17. We had a Ferrari that turned over after clipping Allegié. So that was crazy. No real structural damage that I could see. My only concern, and I hate that I'm bringing it up because it probably draws more attention to it, is that with the crash I'm going to be talking about next, those are some pretty extreme accidents that could have, if given a scenario, caused problems, blah, 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 blah. So given the propensity to fix specific safety issues that potentially are there or not that we're seeing internationally, I wonder if we'll start to see changes to that aspect of the track coming up soon, just from the aspect of, well, that was an extreme accident. I that's a general point of whether or not we're to the point, if we see an extreme accident, do we just need to fix the track? And not like, okay, well, you can get into an extreme accident in any scenario, but does the track area conducive to accidents, which obviously turn 17 would, because it's just a wall with tires there. I mean, you could just touch it and get spiraled into the air like Christian Vautier did. I said Tristan. I'm tired. Beyond that, he had first lap contact with Olivier Pla, who decided to try to ignore the Cadillac that in turn one for some reason at the first lap of a 12-hour race. We always say you can't win the race in turn one, and he legitimately thought that was not a correct statement. So he decided to try it himself. Ended up having mechanical issues due to contact, which had him spin pretty much into the dirt and kicked up a lot of dust. But we had cut tires from the Corvette. which ended up having pretty much terminal issues throughout the entire race, which was terminal for the potential class win. You had the class pole sitting Ferrari and GTD, who had issues with a cut tire lap one. But that 90 that I just talked about earlier comes back up where basically we got a couple hours or an hour left to go, and Vautier decides he's understeering, he's misjudging the exit of turn 17, thinks he's got more room than he does, and he's hard on the gas up until the last second, going straight towards turn 17 wall, and snags it with his left front, hooks it with the tires, the car just basically hooks, grabs, lifts, and flies 360 degrees in the air. Throws tires everywhere, NSX gets hit, the Mazda 55, and it ends up getting damaged, has to have the nose of the prototype replaced, which you could then basically say could have caused part of the clutch issues because they had to go in and have a longer stop, blah, 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 blah. So, daisy chain that caused an effect along, and that really hampered a lot of other teams' races too, but no issues with Vautier later, apologizing to the team. They're going to unfortunately miss Long Beach. Hopefully they can make it to Mid-Ohio, but beyond that, that really, really was a setback for that team when they started so high, and they were in the top five when that accident occurred as well. So they had a strong team in Daytona, strong team at Sebring. They looked like they could absolutely compete for the championship, and now they have to miss a round, effectively taking out them out of that championship, really hurting their NAEC chances with the non-finish here. So their season is essentially for naught after two races of the year. So unfortunate news out of that camp. But a lot of news, and the only thing I could say is I just hope that Long Beach sees those P2s a little bit closer in pace, because we're going to need to see them start to have to do stuff, because you have to start building some itinerary for success here. I mean, right, we give credit to Toyota and Mazda, and I mean, obviously I do. I'm a fan, so I have to, but those are not successful organizations, and you can't have a successful championship in which you're promoting two different classes of cars in which one is not even remotely close to competing, even though they don't have all the necessary chips that, you know, are available to the pro teams on a given weekend that will help them. You've got to be able to do something that eases that viewpoint, because it's so easy to make right now because those P2s are so off the pace visually than the DPIs. So moving on to GT in Sebring with the two classes, starting with GTLM, Porsche, by their own driver's admission, backing into a class win when others, with strategy, safety cars, the way it worked out, from Nick Tandy even saying that they really didn't have the pace to win, but they certainly were in the position to win at the end of it and had benefited with a little luck, with strategy and the safety cars coming out. They were able to hold their positions and finish for first and third. So again, a great win for Porsche after really not getting any wins in their maiden year last year, only coming at Lime Rock. This is the first, I would say, major endurance win, as being the 12 Hours of Sebring. It's a prestigious event for America, endurance racing. So I've got to imagine that this will probably start accelerating, I would say, their success in IMSA as well as WC. I've got to imagine that this is definitely a shot in the arm for that team. But them openly admitting that they still need to do more testing on this, they still need to find more pace, so really, it's going to be interesting to see if they can carry any momentum to the WC season or further along to the IMSA season, unless they get more testing or they get more familiar with this car, which they're openly admitting that they aren't still fully comfortable with. So I really thought BMW was going to play more of a role in this than they did. I didn't think the BOP hurt them that much. The pace still, I still think it's a youthful organization. They're still learning. I would say Aston Martin seems to be more prepared than BMW. They have MTech that really hasn't done any endurance racing at all, that's preparing the WC car, who I'm not doubting at all has the capability of setting this thing up, but there is something to be said for experience, and I look at Aston Martin's just continuous testing on it. I mean, sure, the car might not be blowing doors off. And I don't know what the current pace is of that car, but it's logging mile after mile after mile. They don't care. They just want to make sure that car will not break at all. And pace will come as it comes. So I just think that the BMW has the opportunity to be successful. It's still just in its infancy. So I'm not really, again, if I was a BMW fan, I wouldn't even be worried at all. This is, they survived, you know, halfway decent through the race. So I've got to take this as a somewhat successful, win outside of, okay, well, maybe they didn't compete overall for the overall win or for the class win. So beyond that, it's just, I really don't have a huge issue with the class. And outside of seeing Rizzi leave, and that's a whole nother discussion that I really want to get to, but it's sad to see them go, and hopefully we'll see them back by the end of the season. That is an entire mess in itself, and I'm disappointed that Ferrari can't support their American leg of endurance racing, sports car racing, especially in a market that is dominated by the North American market. I mean, just to be frank, Ferrari is absolutely, relishing its success because of American money invested in that company by buying its products. There's just so much American interest in Ferrari. There is obviously always international interest, but the money's in America in terms of where Ferrari gets it. So very interesting to see that team not be represented at all or not even assisted at all, or Ferrari don't have a plan for replacing that team if that team it doesn't have the funds necessary to field a car for the full year. And it's awful to see negligence, especially in the GTLM category, especially in a factory program. So really disappointing. Beyond that, GTD, I tip my hat to Paul Miller and Lambo. What a fantastic backup for the Mark after winning the 24 Hours of Daytona. So that's why I'm saying we'll see what Porsche does, because obviously Lamborghini, having not really won a 24-hour event, wins that, takes momentum to go win this 12-hour endurance race, which I don't believe they've won this either. So if they have, I'm sure I'll be corrected on it. So, but that's that. It just shows that momentum's real in this category, and that not only that they played the perfect strategy, because they had a Scuderia Corsa Ferrari that was coming for them at the end of the race, and I just truly believe that if they had a few more laps, a few more minutes, we would have seen a really epic bout for the win in that class. So to see the Mercedes up there as well, the Lexus doing well, NSX doing pretty well as well, the abundance of different kinds of cars that are in this class that are all able to be competitive, and you all see them shine throughout different parts of the race, was really satisfying, especially when you had breaks in action from the GTLM and the prototype categories, if there was any breaks in those actions. So all in all, the entire race played out fantastic. Well, not a whole lot of safety cars. There was a decent amount, but they were all for a decent amount of accidents or canopies getting thrown on the track and the wind throwing the canopies on the track. I can't see it. We did that. We didn't do that. That was another camp. But the wind basically picked up a bunch of canopies, hit a light pole, and then just bounced on the track, and that was pretty nuts. Great race. Even the CTSC race was fun. GT3 Cup race had a last lap crash on the last turn for both first and second, so third ended up winning. That was fantastic. So it remains to be seen how they're going to fold away all that racing when WC comes next year, because they're going to have to. We're still in a Wednesday to Sunday format in terms of when everybody's going to be there. They're not adding an extra day, so they're going to have to nix something. It'll be a shame to see some of those extra support series go. Just when they felt like they were gaining momentum in terms of actually being competitive, fun to watch, you were paying attention to them more than you ever did in the previous years. So it'll be a shame to see them go if they do, but great racing at Sebring all around. Oh, I forgot to say, back to prototype TPI, Pippo Durrani as well. What an insanely, insanely talented prototype driver. I'm surprised he's not in something much, much faster, competing for something much, much more prestigious in terms of overall pace and whatever. I'm talking Le Mans, I'm talking IndyCar, Formula One. Just something where he's getting more notice, because, I mean, he is literally just running off and hiding. It feels like he's just doing Sebastian Vettel-like stints, but he's just doing them every lap, where you would just see, oh, there's that first second, that first lap, 1 second gap that he's got pulled, but it just feels like it. He's just able to just run away and hide. And that's been the really startling thing about his pace, and I've just been really, really astounded, even at Sebring now twice that he's been basically able to just make the rest of the field look slow. And at a tough track on the 11th, you know, hour, 50th minute, when everybody's tired and everything doesn't drive well, he's able to put these laps and he's able to make it look easy. And that's, I think, what is going to be so interesting to see from him, what he eventually keeps doing, because he's doing GT racing. It's just amazing to me that he hasn't found a P1 driver. He hasn't found something that is he's able to show his individual talent more, because it's there in spades. And that kid's going places. So, State of Future, Prototype Talks 2 took place, and we'll hopefully have to get into that eventually in the next episode too, because I just keep moving through all this stuff. But hopefully that involves P1 convergence, where that we do see a similar prototype category in IMSA and WC. I think it would be better for everybody to be in that kind of a realm, and I think that's the direction that WC and Le Mans need to go to as well. Is an IMSA strategy where maybe it's not this cost savings that you're seeing, where it's this kind of cheap level of Acura-esque, oh, we're just going to put a little valence, like fin, like not valence, but a little fin over basically what is already existing bodywork and call that an Acura. Like, I don't see how that's an Acura outside of the headlights, and you just basically put like a plank of carbon fiber and etched out some headlights where it looks like a car. Okay, congrats. That's now an Acura. Maybe more money in than that, but I think that's the right call. That's where the sweet spot is in terms of getting enough competition, but and also having creativity in this sport where you need it. So I hope that that's the case. We'll see WC here. What it feels like will be a more consistent basis too, with the additional pits that they're going to be building for next year's event. They're going to be building that in between turns 16 and 17 on the Ullman backstretch there, the Ullman straight. So hopefully we'll see that expansion turn into a more permanent solution for WC, and hopefully that means that they're going to be sharing regulations, or at least they're going to be in a much more ego-friendly realm where that IMSA doesn't feel like it's still the little kid when it legitimately has a couple cards that it can pull in terms of having clout and having the competition, having the backing of competition and support from fans. So that'll be interesting to see. Moving on to ELMS, that's coming up. 2018 schedule, really not too different from last year's. Six rounds, starting at Circuit Paul Ricard, going to Monza, then Red Bull Ring, going back to Silverstone, then Spa, then Portimao. So it's going to be a fantastic season, in my opinion. LMP2 is where you're going to find the best P2 racing out of any of the main major categories, by far. Dunlop and Michelin are going to be in the tire war. You're going to have Ligiers, Orecas, you're going to have Dallara's, Alpine's even going to be in there, so which is based in Oreca. So, but you have the strength of the field is going to be just how diverse it is, as well as the different kinds of teams that are going to be competing, stepping down from WC, stepping over from I don't think there's an Asian Le Mans series team in here. I don't think so. But regardless, so you have some WC teams that are going to be moving over here, but also just the strength and the caliber of the drivers are going to be something to watch for as well. LMP3 is more going to be the same of what we saw last year. I'm going to be interested in how the Normas compete against the just fleet of Ligiers. I think Normas have the pace, especially on longer straights, tracks that are going to have more capabilities for top-end speed from the Norma. That car should definitely be good, but there's only three of them, so we'll see how that works. GT category, I wish we had more cars, but the strength of the drivers in that category is, I think, where we're going to find a lot of excitement, and you're going to see a lot of great driving, a lot of great passing. But again, you can't ask for everything, and a lot of the GTE AM cars are competing in a super season that I think might have definitely done an ELMS season, so you're not seeing them here, or even having that joint effort to do the full season, because it's a huge commitment to do the WC season, so that affects it as well. But again, JWM Motorsport, JMW Motorsport versus Spirit of Race, that's probably where I'm going to be most interested, beyond Proton Racing as well. And who can forget Tracy Krohn is going to have his lime green car crashing into things also in this category, so that'll be fun to watch. The prologue for WC is also kicking off as I'm speaking right now, but while you're listening to this, it's already over. All I want to say is that don't trust anything just yet. We'll see where everything is. They're making EOT adjustments for the P1 category. There's low downforce setups, high downforce setups. There's shakedowns happening. There is planned specific tests going on for a specific lap logging. A lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that we don't have a clear picture of what's legitimately going on, that I can't feel wise to say, hey, look, we should start panicking, or hey, look, you guys are just freaking out over nothing. So I don't think this is nothing. I do think that this is something to be concerned about, but I definitely feel like the goal still is that we should not be seeing Toyota not only have a lap advantage, but also a 4 to 5 second advantage in lap times. That's not what Toyota want. That's not what WC want. Just from, I mean, take away just the emotional aspect, that's not what they want from a business standpoint, too. And that's, again, if we're 2018, that's business drives everything. So that's going to factor in. These guys cannot have them winning Le Mans by a 5-plus lap, you know, per lap, or 5-plus second per lap, you know, win with extra fuel and all this other stuff. Fine, it shows hybrids are great and it gets better fuel mileage and you can make them with electricity to go give you some boost. But it doesn't feel like you're doing anything where you're winning anything legitimate. So they have to get it right. They have to get this pace right. And it's relying on these privateers to at least show the pace and have somewhat consistent pace, even if the reliability isn't there, which I feel like is the underlying theme for this prologue for those privateers. They're not going to show their full-on pace until maybe at the end of it or when they are getting all real comfortable, because it just doesn't feel like we haven't seen everything, but these Toyotas are putting in some insane lap times. These are quick, quick laps. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them get pegged back. This is the first hour, 30 continuous hour that they do. It's blocked off so that there are the daylight hours that are reserved for specific teams that don't want to do the full 30-hour test for specific reasons, monetary, or they don't want to, you know, they don't want to do the night test. But I think there's a total of 15 cars currently that are actively participating, so they do basically the full day stint. They, I think, take a very, very, very small break, and then they set them out again for the night stint. They do a small break, and then they do the rest of the day stint. So, full 30-hour continuous racing. We're seeing a few teams, like Aston Martin, BMW, and Toyota, actually do a 30-hour endurance test where they're just logging laps. They're just going out there logging laps. They're taking some breaks. It's not a full race pace race mindset, but it is, in general, just running out and logging laps and just running as much as you can. So I love to see that, especially at a test. And the speed trap times too from the Toyota, I think Toyota will be the takeaway here to talk about, just with their overall pace, how just dominant that car is performing on and circuit Paul Ricard, even from 2 years ago or 3 years ago. It's just insane. So they definitely have the pace. Do they have the reliability? And will they have everything ready to go, especially when Fernando and Kamui and everybody else comes back and has their first meeting at Spa? So very, very interesting from that aspect. Really, again, we would really see more of the difference between, I mean, I guess I didn't realize that they would be doing low downforce and high downforce and that you would have some confusion there, but you would see more of a stark difference between the privateer's strength and Toyota's strength. And right now, Toyota just have strength, and it's just strength, 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 strength. Outside of BR1 has a really cool headlight assembly, and that's really interesting and nifty, and I always like looking at pictures of that because it's a gorgeous car. Damn Russians. They make really cool looking stuff. So beyond that, they got to have pace, and I'm not seeing it yet. So again, no, I don't think anything to freak out at. The GG's already been talking about how that they're having discussions on future EOT adjustments made. I think that they are going to. I don't think this is anything that is beyond their control, and we'll see what happens at Spa. But I definitely was not expecting the pace differential to be that much, but I also wasn't expecting Toyota to be this fast. So yeah, so I talked really fast. Beyond that, I hope anybody that heard or even remotely understood what I was saying got anything from that. And yeah, so congratulations for making it this far. I'm out of breath. GT3 quarterly is coming up. I believe it's Kiwi and Chris, and I haven't really checked, so I'm literally just going to cold pitch it to them, and hopefully it's the right people.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Welcome to a new segment here on the Endurance Chat Podcast. It's GT Quarterly. We're going to try to have a GT-only podcast for every 3 or 4 months discussing all the current news, any discussion points on GT racing in the world today. And joining me for the first ever episode of this is Kiwi Chris. Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Kiwi. I'm an alcoholic.
Oh. Okay, Kiwi, you better be sober enough to talk about this blank pan entry list, because we got Sprint and Endurance both out, and Endurance looks fine. We have some new faces we're going to talk about later, but Sprint, the big story is that they limited some pro entries, and the grid kind of died down a bit, at least about 10 cars. There's only about 22 cars.
It's a really small grid for what it is, compared to last year where they had, 30, 35 cars every Sprint round. And why would pro teams now want to race in this series when half the team's just going to be amateur and silver drivers? And for 2 hours of racing, it doesn't make any sense what they've done.
And judging by the entry list here, I think it could be another Audi domination. I mean, WRT brought in three cars. If you remember what the series was back in 2013, 14, maybe even 15, it was just WRT just winning everything in sight and with only about 20 cars to boot.
Yeah, I mean, you're bringing a four-car Armada here to the Sprint Cup. And there's also Santa Lock Racing with another two, Attento with another two. So, seven Audis out of 20 cars.
Well, at least there's some good diversity. There's a Bentley Continental, even though it's the privateer one. I don't think it's the new one that the new Bentley. I think it's the older one. They do have Lamborghini Huracans. They do have two Lexuses, both by ML Frey.
Yes.
Ferrari 488 by Kessel. I believe that's the only one on. Actually, no, there's two Ferraris, both by Kessel. And then there's a lone BMW by TY Technologies. And that is a French GT4 team that did run at the Dubai 24 Hours.
So it is good to see the smaller teams stepping up. Again, they're in Silver Cup. The Ferraris you mentioned are both Pro-Am. One of them is a Thai driver. I'm going to try to pronounce that name. Piti Bredombakkad.
Yeah, those Thai drivers, they always don't come off the top of your tongue very smoothly.
No, but again, it's good to see Asian
rookies. You can't watch the Thailand Super Series, which is on Easter weekend.
Yes. But it's good to see some Asian representation in the series. That's always a good thing. Otherwise, yeah. It's not to say this is a terrible grid, but it's not as good as it could be.
And there's actually, the day we filmed this episode, there's breaking news that the local team, Butsden Jinyun, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right, will come in with two Lamborghinis for the Zolder sprint round, which is exactly probably this, by the time this podcast is up, it's the weekend after Easter. So some local involvement in the sprint round at Zolder, that's going to be excellent for the crowd, trying to draw the crowd in. And plus, guess what's on the support card for the sprint round at Zolder?
Would that be GT4 European Cup?
And what if I told you that they have 47 full season entries?
Wow.
Here's the real kicker. 70 teams applied.
70 teams applied. They kicked out 22 teams.
Yeah. But here's the thing. That's an oversaturation. So, SRO, even though people do kind of, toy them for making new championships and having them fail, which that's a foreshadowing to later on in an episode, but they do have the GT4 Nordic Cup, which is, I believe, it's just only £9,000 British currency for a full season. They have GT4 Central Europe, and then they have the French GT4 Cup. So even though they don't have the GT4 European Series, they still have other methods to go around, which is absolutely perfect. And yeah, that's some insane racing that's going to happen at Zolder.
And GT4 is just an amazing category. The cars are ultra competitive. GT4 is booming the world over. You've got Australian GTs getting GT4s. You've got obviously GT4 Europe. You've got Pirelli World Challenges using GT4 now, isn't it?
Which what? Parallel World Challenge? Yes, they do have GT4. Yes. It's basically in under the skies of GTS. But yes, they do have GT4 in all of their rounds. Yeah. They even added an invitational class for the GT4 cars at Long Beach this year, which they normally don't do due to, unfortunately, the shrinking numbers of GT3 entries in the championship.
GT4 is very much what GT3 started out as before the manufacturer said, we want to have a go at this.
And it's already kind of turning into GT3, isn't it? Because you have Audi, who here's a rundown version of the R8. It's not as fast as, but then you have Mercedes with the AMG, at least BMW, I believe McLaren is having different car.
Yeah, 570S. Yes.
KTM, Sin. They have different cars. If they do have a GT3 model, it's a different car from their GT3 version.
I think Aston's got the advantage.
To be fair, they're probably one of the first ones.
That's true. And of course, you got the Ginetta, which is just the perfect GT4 car. And it's like the stalwart of the series. So it's going to be interesting to see where GT4 ends up.
British GT, most of the grid, it's just made up of GT4 cars. GT3, there's about 12, 13, which if you want to watch British GT racing, they're live streaming all of the UK rounds this year on GT World YouTube page. And, of course, the first round is on Easter weekend, so by the time this episode up is either on right now or available via a replay on website. So,
and you know what? I've got to pay more attention to British GT because they race at some of the best tracks in the world, tracks that aren't really designed for this many cars. And it's just a great watch. I've got to watch more of it. And it's sometimes a good time frame for us Australians, too.
Yeah, they go to Alton Park, and guess what? Rain is in the forecast for that race.
The UK, of course it's going to rain.
Especially Easter weekend, which is about 2 weeks earlier than last year, if I'm remembering correctly. So that's not too good on the climate. And then you go to like tracks like Snetterton. It's not the best, but it's not the worst. And they go to their Blue Riband event, the Silverstone 500.
Three-hour race.
Yep, they go to the Brands Hatch GP circuit. Donington Park is their finale. Mm-hmm. The only unfortunate thing about this series is that they do go to Spa-Francorchamps. I can't remember. I believe it's 1 2-hour race, but that doesn't get live streamed.
Not even on GT World Pass part of the weekend because it's 2 1-hour races now.
Okay, yeah, I believe that was the case last year.
Yeah. So
there's no proper live streaming, but they support the 25-hour Fun Cup race.
Okay.
And they do have some sort of streaming, but it's mostly static cameras and like one moving camera in the pits. That's the thing.
So not the greatest.
But not the greatest. So basically, you might as well just be better up ending up just waiting for the 60-minute highlight show to come on motorsport.tv, which if you just put in a fake email, you don't have to prove your credit card or anything. You just get a free trial. So that should be that should be like no problems at all.
Yes. And some of the names that are in the GT3 cast in British GT, you got Maxime Martin in the Aston, you got obviously Rob Bell, you've got Nicky Tien, TF Sport, are coming in for another season with two cars. Fick Hayes and the other GT3 Essence.
Yeah, Nicky Tien, just fabulous personality in the paddock. And since we're still on the topic of SRO series, he is racing Black Man Endurance. I can't remember the team name, but it's an Aston Martin, of course. And it'll be the first time in a while that Aston Martin will have a contender in the pro class in the Endurance Championship.
Racing with R Motorsport.
R Motorsport, yes, that's the name.
That's actually a ridiculous team. You've got Alex Brundle, Marvin Kirkosher, Maxime Martin in one car, Jake Dennis, Nicky Tien, Matthew Vecchiveri in the other car. That's ridiculous.
Black Pan Sprint, just taking a look at this. Let me count the manufacturers in there. That's Audi, Ferrari, Lexus, Lamborghini, Bentley, and BMW. That's about five or six.
And Endurance, and particularly Jaguar.
They have 11.
Yes.
And that's in the Blanc Pan GT Sprint Series, about five or six. In British GT, there's just a huge bunch. There's a Toyota GT86 GT4. And of course, that you mentioned the Jaguar GT4. And then Endurance, 11 manufacturers.
It's insanity. One of the teams in GT4, the British GT4 team I'm looking forward to is Invictus Games Racing. Those who don't know what Invictus Games are, that's the games for injured war veterans that Prince Harry started. And it's an amazing concept, and I believe this team is part of that. It's like a team for retired and injured soldiers, basically.
Yeah, they did that announcement at the Birmingham Autosport Show. It's not the same weekend as the Dubai 24, so in terms of major sports car coverage, you kind of got shoved under the rug a bit. But that's a very important fact, and that's going to be the debut of a Jaguar GT4 in history.
Yes, and it's going to be, again, Jaguar. Oh, baby. And it looks mean as hell.
And speaking of Jaguar, Jaguar is doing, I believe, at least a part-time schedule in the Blanc Pan Endurance Championship. So Jaguar, just in the SRO front, they're pretty active in 2018, even though they're not doing a full season entry in the Endurance Championship, unfortunately. Some part-time GT3 racing and full-time GT4 racing for those Jaguars.
Yeah, Emil Frey is still going to run the Jag, and I think they're still going to run at least one of the Sprint Series as well.
And in Endurance, we apologize for flip-flopping between the Endurance Sprint and British GT Championships. They're all SRO, so hopefully you'll forgive us. But we got new Bentleys and new Nissans in the Endurance Cup. I think that's worth noticing.
And there's one thing that we haven't talked about with Blanc Pan to Sprint Series that was actually a very big change. The structure
That's
of the weekend.
Right. There's no qualifying races.
Yeah, the structure of the weekend has completely changed. So now each race has got its own qualifying session. Each race is worth equal points, although the point system is still stupid. Paying to the top 10 drivers only. Although with such a smaller grid, it's probably not such a terrible thing.
Yeah, that's kind of the rose-colored lens on this drop of an entry list. I mean, there's not too much of controversy for points. And plus, this is the right thing to do. I really didn't really mind or hate the qualifying races, but I think moving it to just a regular race makes it even more, what's the right word here? It's more important.
Yes.
It's more important to try to race for that win, because guess what? You're winning points that's equal to race two. And I think the good news is that we've seen many times that the leader of the qualifying race just runs away with it and then gets pulled for the main race and runs away with that too.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen anymore with these individual qualifying sessions. So Sprint, even with the drop of entries this year, it still might be a bit interesting to watch.
Oh, definitely, because GT3 racing generally is close as hell when SRO do the best job of BOP on it. So the cars we do have will be on each other's asses, that's for sure.
We do apologize if we don't cover too much in depth. We tried to keep this to a 50-minute show. Let's talk about ADAC, Kiwi, because there's a huge important thing to notice, and that's the European debut of the Honda NSX GT.
Yes.
Team Schubert that's running it. They're usually a BMW team.
Well, they've got a decent, very decent team looking after it then. But yeah, ADAC GT3 is some of the best GT3 racing you're ever going to see. And the grid size this year is what, about 25, 30 cars, I think?
I think it's more around 40.
Yeah. And they're all GT3 cars. It's not a mixed class. And you look at the quality of some of the drivers.
It's all GT3. Christopher Mies.
Yes.
Kelvin Vanderland. Alessio Piccarello, which is, you've seen him in the Land Motorsport in 12 Hours, which he did a very good job. He even led the race for them. Precote Herbert Motorsport, you see them dominating the Creventic series all the time. GRT Grassers gonna have a bit of a livery change. Team Orange One is gonna be sponsoring them, so there's gonna be a little bit of orange on those green beasts.
Excellent.
Zach Speed keeps up with. Oh, what?
I was going to say, there's one team here that's really interesting. Team Rosberg.
Yeah, they're usually a DTM team, dipping their toes into the world of GT3.
Yeah, names with the Hurricane?
The Hurricane. And only name I recognize is Jimmy Erickson, which is. He did a few Mercedes races last year in Blancpain. I think he was the one that dumped the Battlefield Mercedes at the Spot 24 last year. Yeah, that comes into mind. But he's also a decent Formula 3 racer, so he's trying to transfer his skills in the open wheel to a closed cockpit sort of thing. Let's see here. Phoenix Racing. Philip Ellis graduating from the Audi TT Cup.
It's
important. Team of Bernhard's new team.
Yes.
Timo Bernhard's racing in this one too.
With
his co-driver's gonna be Kevin Estra, yeah.
Why not? What I love about the European GT3 season is all these drivers can go race Blancpain, they can go race the Spa 24, they can go race in Germany, they can go race in the UK. And they can go race some WEC races as well. It all doesn't overlap and it's great. I love it.
And also ISR, a Czech Audi team. And this is important to notice because I believe this is their debut in the series. And the reason for that is that the calendar changes to where Autodrome Most, a Czech racetrack, has an ADAC GT Masters date. And this is probably the biggest date the track has ever had. And so it's going to gather new eyes to the track. So ISR only makes sense to be the hometown team. I think they are in for the full season too.
Yes, they are. And that's actually a really, this is the first time I've seen the Autodrome Most. It's actually a really interesting track layout just from looking at Wikipedia.
Yeah, some obscure racing series did go there.
Like European like Truck Racing.
That's true. That's probably the biggest one they had so far. The FIA Central European Zone Championship, which is basically like, hey, you can run your GT3, you can run your Formula Renault car, you can run anything here. And also, Renault Clio Cup Central Europe did go here before, and they support the ADAC GT Masters, so that's logistics made easy.
Check everything in one folder, away we go. So yeah,
there is an interesting team name here, and Lucas Lehr is on this team. Iron Force by Ring Police, and that's if you see the livery of that car, it's just absolutely fantastic.
Iron Force by Ring Police.
Yeah. Other important notes: Callaway Competition does drop down from two cars to one due to them being in the Pirelli World Challenge. And then the rest is pretty much the same. This ADAC GT Masters season is going to be ridiculous, and the season starts in the 14th and 15th of April at the, I'm going to butcher this, the Oscherleben. With the famously for the person who needs to be in a being in a dark room and beaten.
Yes. That is the worst turn one ever designed.
It's normal. At least the first race of the season is normally the worst, and there's still relatively decent racing.
And of course, this series also goes to Red Bull Ring, Nürburgring, obviously, Hockenheim, and Zandvoort Session Ring. So
And Nürburgring, they use the VLN portion of the track. So instead of using doing the whole Dunlop little, I think it's called the Michael Schumacher Groove?
Mm-hmm.
Something about that? Instead of going all the way down there, they just use the VLN shortcut, and just don't go in Nordschleife, but that's their track. And it does provide interesting racing.
Yes.
And we've been talking about booming series so far in this first part of the episode. Black Pants Sprint, that's the bait. But now we're going to go on the opposite end of the spectrum. We got some interesting pieces here. The Hampton Downs 12-hour Kiwi, you're looking forward to that so much, but it ended up being cancelled.
No. I was really ready to book my flights too, and, you know, top-level racing, GT3 racing, and back in New Zealand, with a fantastic facility. I was so looking forward to it, and then it's just gone.
Yeah. Australian GT will still come to that track in October.
Yeah, I'm not going to fly over there for that.
Yeah. And I remember last year, the Hampton Down, was the 500-kilometer race back then?
Yep.
So it was only like 12, 13 cars. Mm. That wasn't too much of a good show for the fans and on TV.
Yes. I think Australian GT, though, now that they're having GT4 cars as well, and they had 30-odd cars at the Grand Prix races.
Yep. Yeah, which includes, of course, the GT3, GT4, and the GT Cup cars.
Hmm.
Or not GT Cup, but old GT3s, which they call the Trophy Class, which was a separate series last year, but did merge into the main series again this year.
Yeah, so they definitely had a decent crack at it. And it'd be great if they can run that many cars over there for Hampton Downs. Hampton Downs being...
I believe it is only a sprint round this year, isn't it?
I'm just trying to confirm that. No, it's endurance round.
It is an endurance round. We may still have a 500-kilometer race.
Yeah. Which would be good, because it's a great track to race... endurance racing on. Of course, they also go to the Bend next round, so that's the first race for the Bend.
They do the full 7-kilometer circuit.
Yeah, they will be doing the full 7K circuit, and Flood will be there on the flag, so he'll tell us how it is on Supercar Chat. Make sure you listen to Supercar Chat, people. So it's in a really interesting place, GT racing down here.
Yeah, and it didn't help that the Australian GT... For at least for an outside audience, there's no free streaming out there to the world. But now that Australian GT broke the chains from being a supercar support series, they can at least do live streaming.
Because that whole shim model, you know, they said that we're going to break away from being a support category. Then supercars went to buy them out. Cam said, "No, what are you doing? This is stupid." They sort of slunk their way back into being support category. It's just an interesting state, and I'm not quite sure what the answer is, whether the answer is to have supercars look after it or whether to go completely on their own. They're sort of in the middle of nowhere place at the moment.
Yeah, it was 2017, or late 2016, when the schedule for that respective season got announced. And they only had, I believe, Adelaide and Albert Park that had supercars supporting them.
Yeah.
And they're going to places like Tasmania. They're going to Simmons Plains. But the guys, they didn't like that because, hey, we gain valuable exposure from being with the supercar guys.
Mm.
However, this year, they just erased all sorts of partnerships. Seems like they burned the bridges a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Bit salty because they chose Audi R8 Cups over a diverse Australian GT class.
Yeah, that's the decision that it makes no sense to anyone, because why would you go to a flagship of supercars event?
Yeah, so the bright side is that Albert Park was the only one that wasn't streamed. Only race three was broadcast live anyway, and that ended under safety car. And so every single round by now will be broadcasted live, mostly by, I believe, the Motorsport TV livestream.com page.
Mm-hmm.
For Shannon's Nationals, Hampton Downs YouTube page will probably stream that round as always.
Yep. But again, it's just disappointing that they're going to Hampton Downs and not the 12 hours that I was hoping for.
Yeah.
It's just a shame that the way that ACO, not the ACO, the SRO tried to schedule that. You know, you got the big teams coming to Bathurst in February. They were going to schedule those races in October. Australia and New Zealand are pretty close to each other. It makes not a lot of sense to come down here in October, go back to Europe, come back in February. In the middle of that, go to Malaysia as well.
That does bring us to the topic of the death of the Asia-Pacific 36 Cup, which was announced, I believe, at the 2016 Spa 24?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Their plan was to have the Hampton Downs 12-hour, which will be in October, the Sepang 12-hours, which will be in December, and of course, the Bathurst 12-hour in the first weekend of February. Mm. And they're trying to get teams from, like, Australia for Sepang, because Sepang desperately needed a little bit of growth. Some Asian teams over the Bathurst in New Zealand. New Zealand doesn't really have the proper market for it right now. There is GT3 cars in the country, but there's only like two or three of them. Mm.
The GTR
car just arrived as well. So they're still growing.
Yeah.
And demand a massive motorsport event right at the prospect of them. And the grown domestic racing scene for this whole of cars is probably demanding a bit too much by the SRO.
There's two different problems at play here. The GT3 cars in New Zealand, they race in one of two series. Either the North Island or South Island Endurance Championship, where they race on the same track as Toyota 86s and Celicas and tiny things. And the GTR New Zealand Championship, which they're on the same track as Chevy Croft DPs and small cars and all that sort of stuff. So it's like very multi-class racing. It's not really a GT3/GT4 series over there for them.
Yeah, and that's the biggest form of GT racing, GT racing New Zealand. That's the series that gets actually broadcasted the most now. That's Speedworks Events. They're streaming on the livestream.com page, and they have, I believe, one or two GT3 cars running out at Pukekohe this weekend.
Mm-hmm. And the other problem with New Zealand, and this is what I don't understand about the way this was scheduled. The New Zealand motorsport season runs through the New Zealand summer because you don't want to race on snow. So it goes from about October to about March. Bathurst 12-hour is in February. Why not schedule something in New Zealand a bit closer to that to make it easier for the teams? So maybe in March, where it makes more sense. Maybe I'm talking rubbish, but I don't know. Why wouldn't you do that?
A counterpoint is that March kind of, they want to get the cars to Europe.
January then.
For the Blank Pan European Series.
Okay. January.
That's also tough. I mean, it feels weird now starting to talk about oversaturation of winter endurance events.
that was our next point.
January, you have Dubai 24 Hour, which is an excellent event on its own. The other Kervantic events beg to be different. And then you have the Daytona 24 Hours about 2 weeks after. Week after that, that's the Bathurst 12 Hour. And those events being so close to each other like that, it's not really that of a problem because there's three separate markets. There's North American market and uber big rich European teams from Europe for the Rolex 24. The Dubai 24 is for basically the amateur teams. And then Bathurst is for, you know, the regular upfront guys that, you know, in GT3. Adding another SRO event would harm the event they're trying to promote, because Bathurst, It wouldn't be hurt too much. It might get have as much entries due to some teams maybe saving money in racing in New Zealand instead. But yeah, it's just a tricky situation to just move any dates around for this Hampton Downs race to work.
Yeah, and I'm just really disappointed because New Zealand at the moment, as a motorsporting nation, we've never been in a better place. We've got so many people around the world. We've got a driver in Formula 1 again for the first time in ages. We've got all these GT3, GT2, LMP1 drivers.
That's the Super GT current champion.
Exactly. Oh, I hope you talk to hell about on the GT podcast.
Oh, God.
We're in such
sorry, Kiwi.
But we've got so
you didn't get really to him death of naturalist.
Oh, God. But we're still, you know, we've got such a motorsport heritage. I mean, Bruce McLaren's a bloody Kiwi, for God's sake. Why?
That's right. They just named the track after him.
Yeah. Why haven't we thought about embracing one of the best motorsporting nations where everyone's into it, rallying is a massive thing back in New Zealand? I mean, I've got a family member who does co-driving in rally. Why haven't we embraced New Zealand motorsport on the global stage a lot more? And it really annoys me a lot.
And it's at a perfect time for the New Zealand racing scene to grow because guess what? It's in the winter for the Northern Hemisphere.
Exactly.
There's nothing going on.
The one series that
the Toyota Racing Series, which was begging to be streamed for years, yes, finally did so this year in 2018. New Zealand Grand Prix was streamed live for the very first time. And this is only going to New Zealand racing scene, I think, because people want to see a New Zealand Grand Prix to see the future Formula One stars. Mm. But when you see supports like the BNT New Zealand V8 Touring Cars, New Zealand V8 Utes,
Sang-Yong Utes,
which almost have a photo finish guarantee every round, Toyota 86s they have, probably Porsche's GTR racing, Formula 4. It's just a huge plethora of racing action that the fans watch via the stream.
Mm. You just look at the Pukekohe V8 round, and you just see it absolutely packed. There's one racetrack in New Zealand for every 200,000 people. We love our motorsport. Give us more of it.
And of course, New Zealand Superbikes. I mean, it's a relatively small chunk, but that's even now streamed live for free because it was streamed for free all the time. But now they put up the race replays for free because there's a demand for them. Hmm. People want to see New Zealand racing action. It's the winter. Nobody wants to have a racingless winter.
Exactly.
And
this is
speaking of racingless winter. That's what Kreventic is trying to not do. There is some images that kind of got leaked. If you went on their website, there's this thing called the 24-hour GT Middle East series.
So what is this?
I'm not sure the details of regulations were accurately announced, but calendars. I did see calendars. I don't know if it's been taken off their site. Kiwi, if you want to go check the 24-hour series website, you can. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's been taken down, but two of their races, which would be like a 6-hour, 12-hour, 9-hour, stuff like that, two of their races clashed with the Daytona 24 and the Bathurst 12-hour.
Yeah, you're never going to start off a series with that sort of clashing.
Okay. It could be an interesting, enticing effort to try to, you know, get teams that run Dubai 24 to race a full season of that championship while they're there. But they seen how the European races turned out. I don't know if they think the Middle East is going to be any different.
Well, I just don't understand what Kreventic are trying to do. They've had... Okay, the GT racing series is going fine. They've got a TCE series which is meh at best.
I think 13 cars at a 24-hour race at Silverstone a few weeks ago, and they realized it was so bad they had to mix the start of the 24-hour race with the finishing ends of the GT 12-hour race, and with the protos as well.
Yeah, and the prototype series, which is an even worse spot. How many protos did they have at Dubai? Six?
They had about, was it like seven, eight?
Yeah. So, you know, they've got all these, not quite stillborn, but on their way to death series. And they're trying to start up another one in a very niche market. I'm not sure that's the right way to go about it.
Well, obviously, it said 24 Middle East GT series. It won't be protos, I would think. But yeah, you only had two prototypes at the Silverstone round. That was supposed to be your biggest one.
Ugh. Kvyatkh just needs to pare things back a bit. Stick to the core events, the 24 of Dubai. Stick with the 12 hours of Spa. You know, just focus on the COTA round they've got coming up this year. Just make those events decent and then work on re-expanding your calendar again. I think they've overreached and it's costing them dearly.
Yeah, but the Kvyatkh did do something. Oh, go ahead.
This is essentially an amateur series. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, they made it purely for the amateurs. The pros are constantly reminded that this is not your playground. You're welcome to race here, but this is for the amateurs. Kvyatkh did do a very smart thing, and they realized that having the TCE is a completely separate series, and racing outside of the GT series is a complete mistake. So Silverstone was the only one that they didn't have involvement with the GT race for at least the finish of the race. Rest of the season of TCE will be within the 24-hour GT series. So that's something they did do right.
So Chris is just thinking of the calendar of the proposed 24-hour Middle East series. And why? I'm just saying, why?
So, we did talk extensively about the current state of Kvyatkh. This is what they have for, at least this is a leaked image of this racing series. The 6 hours of Dubai, Daytona 24 weekend.
What
on? 6 hours of Yas Marina, Bathurst 12-hour weekend, and the 9 hours of Dubai, the 15th and 16th of February. Keep in mind that most of these races will take place on a Saturday, or all of them will take place on Saturday due to Sunday being the start of the work week over there.
But yeah, that's just a calendar that makes no sense.
Yeah.
At all.
Whether they will continue to go through with this, and whoever's on the web design side might get fired for releasing this too early, I imagine.
The only possible rationale I could have for this series is they're not trying to target anyone at all apart from those in the Middle East who are never going to the Bathurst anyway. You know, your rich Sikhs and oil barons with too much money. That's about the only market that makes sense here.
And keep in mind, Kiwi, we can probably say that this is the only podcast that will talk about this 24-hour Middle East series. You heard it here first. And this is our first episode of this GT quarterly little thing we're doing here on Endurance Chat. We're sorry for if you get confused talking about Blanc Pan GT, Sprint, Endurance, and the British GT series concurrently. They're SRO stuff, so you kind of muffle it all in there. But we hope we can turn this series into something that we talk about on topics that no other place is talking about, and obscure racing championships and news that no one else is talking about. And I hope that you guys find that enjoyable, to find stuff maybe you didn't know before. Maybe we could talk more into more obscure GT races. I'm sure Palanga will be covered here when we get to that road.
I'm tipping some live commentary of Palanga.
Yeah.
Open up the Discord if we're considered. We commentate away. It'd be great. We're a train wreck.
And if you find something...
episode, I think, of the Yeah, it was Nicky Well. And of course, if there's something you want us to talk about, let us know. We'll chat about it. If you find a race series that Chris doesn't know about, A, oh my God, how amazing is that? And B, we'd love to see it.
Exactly. And I think it's time to end this first episode of GT Quarterly.
Indeed.
So, if you haven't already, check out the Super GT special. We also discussed Super Tyq with our special dear friend RJ O'Connell.
And of course, his Supercar Chat for all you V8 fans out there. Make sure you listen to that because it's me and Flood talking about stuff we actually know what we're talking about. It's fantastic.
That is fantastic. So, yeah, two or three new podcasts to look forward to at the conclusion of this one. This has been a great first episode. We hope to continue to improve with more. And with me, Chris Washington 97, and Kiwi Chris, we're going to see you on a future episode. Chat.
Guys, get ready. The WC season is just around the corner. It's basically a month away. We have IMSA coming up at Long Beach. And we have the first time IMSA's back at Mid-Ohio in all, it feels like 10 years. That's coming up in May, early May as well. We've got, and obviously VLN's kicking off. We have with ADAC, everything's starting to kick, just rev back into gear here. So stay tuned to WC and USCR on the subreddits as well as us here. We'll just try to pump out more content for you guys so you can at least get it as absorbers as we're absorbing it. So, and, oh man, I'm so glad the prologue's here and I'm so glad we got WC cars on track. So last but not least, Kazoo!